We're learning Perkei Avos, the first chapter, Mishnah Tetzayin 16. The words of Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel Hoya Omer, Rabbi Gamliel used to say, Asilcha Rav, accept a teacher upon yourself, Vehistalik min hasafik, remove yourself from uncertainty, V'al tarbil aser amudos. And translated here in the Art Scroll, do not give excessive tithes by estimating instead of measuring. As we look at the last page of our packet, we find Rabbi Gamliel was a Nasi. He actually was related to Hillel, who was his grandfather, as we'll see momentarily in Rashi. Rabbi Gamliel in our Mishnah should not be confused with a later Rabbi Gamliel of Yavne. This Rabbi Gamliel, the grandson of the great Jewish teacher Hillel, is called Rabbi Gamliel HaZaken, the elder. And we're going to also discuss how this is the first time someone is called Rabban, Rabbi. Hillel was not called Rabbi Hillel or Rabban Hillel, or Shammai was not called Rabban Shammai. Why do we begin calling him in this generation Rabban and not in the previous generations? That we'll see in a moment in Likutei Shesh. Now, as I always print from the Wikipedia, which gives us more than just the perspective of the Jewish interpretation of these great individuals, but more of a worldly interpretation. Sometimes we find things which are certainly against Torah philosophy. Rabbi Gamliel certainly did live toward the very end of the second Beis HaMikdash, and he was a person who was of tremendous stature, being a Nasi. Up until this point, there were zugot, pairs. The last of the pairs, Hillel and Shammai. Although most people feel that Hillel and Shammai did not like one another, really quite the opposite was the case. Hillel and Shammai worked hand in hand together. Hillel was the Nasi, and then Shammai was the second in command, or the Av Bestin, if you will, the vice president. Shammai resumed the position, accepted the position after Hillel had passed away, for approximately 10 years of his life. When Shammai accepted the position of Nasi, there was no one who took the position after him of Av Bestin. And so too, when it came to Hillel's child, who was the Nasi, by the name of Shimon, which we do not have here yet. And also when it comes to Shimon's son, who are introduced in our Mishnah of Rabban Gamliel, he was the Nasi, yes, but there was no Av Bestin. For there were no zugot, there were no longer pairs, but rather one leader and one leader only. According to some interpretations, Rabbi Gamliel chas v'shalom to say this, but there are those other religions that claim that he converted. We're going to prove 100% beyond the shadow of the doubt that this cannot be the case. First of all, he remained the Nasi, the leader of the entire Jewish world. But we're going to also see that Rabbi Gamliel was not just respected in his lifetime, but even after his lifetime. The Talmud in Masechtas Moed Katan on Chav Zayin Amud Beis tells us that as expensive as funeral arrangements are now, when they take advantage of you at the most vulnerable state of a person's life, moments after a person has lost someone that they love and care for so dearly, they take you and milk you for everything that you're worth. In the good old days, which weren't always so good, it was even worse. Says the Talmud, Berishona, Haisa hotzas emes, kasha l'krovav, yosim misaso. That the expenditures of having to provide the funeral, the casket especially, was so expensive that it was more difficult for those people and more painful and emotional than the actual death of the loved one themselves. It became so disastrous that people could no longer afford to pay for the caskets, and therefore they would just leave their loved ones astray and run away because they could not afford to pay for such an expensive funeral. Ad Shabbat Rabban Gamliel, says the Talmud, once Rabban Gamliel came along, V'nohad Kalos Rosh Ba'atzmo. Imagine, Rabban Gamliel was a person who was the Nasi. He would have had the most elaborate, most expensive funeral, like Rachman Latzlan, you find all these other times and situations where a person dies, but for some reason they want to be buried in their Cadillac, dressed up in their finest of attire. So you think Rabban Gamliel certainly would do such a thing. And when it came to his funeral, Rabban Gamliel did something which was unbelievable. He accepted and told people that when he dies, he wants to have the least expensive funeral possible. He ended up having v'yotze b'kli pishton, that instead of an expensive casket, they just put him in garments which were made out of pishton, translated literally as flax or linen, very inexpensive. And because of this, he set the tone that this is how people will also be buried, in the most inexpensive of garments and funeral expenses. Nowadays, Rav Papa says, Nog atzma, nog alma, gafil besrada barzuza, that a person is buried now with bigdi canvas, as Rashi says, canvas, which is only worth $1, a zuz, very inexpensive. So we see clearly from the Talmud the tremendous respect that is placed upon Rabbi Gamliel, not only in his lifetime, but even after he died, the tremendous messages that he sent forward. And this is an important lesson, that when it comes to weddings and bar mitzvahs, what do? We always try to outdo the next person. Instead of having a 5-piece band, chas v'shalom, for your wedding, you have to have 7-piece band. Instead of having 3 courses, you have to have a 5-course meal. And it has to be more and more fancy. Until we now look at the situation where it's unbelievably expensive. I was just having a conversation with someone that said that the band alone for his daughter's wedding cost $9,000. $9,000 just for the band. That is the level that we have reached in our society. Wouldn't it be great if another Rabban Gamliel in our generation would step up and say, I am going to demonstrate at my child's wedding, at my own wedding, that we are going to just get by with the very bare necessities. And God willing, that would set the tone for all of Klal Yisrael, that we would not have to spend unbelievable, absorbent amounts of money for a single day of an event. Instead, maybe that money could be given to the chassan and the kala, perhaps even for a down payment on a beautiful home. But this was Rabban Gamliel, a leader while he was alive, and yes, even after he has departed, still teaching the messages of being able to be concerned about the money and the wealth of Klal Yisrael. This is the sensitivity of our sages. Now, why is he called Rabban Gamliel? Why don't we just call him Gamliel, just like we find by Shammai and Hillel? It was brought down in the Sefer Lekutei Sheish, in the name of in the Sefer Beis L'Avos, as follows. Ad Yemei Kol HaTanoim. In the days of the Tanoim, who are the authors of the Mishnah from 70 to 200 CE, Common Era, Shulmalo Lo Nikra Mashim Rabban. We don't find the name Rabban anywhere. Rak min Rabban Gamliel. Only from this point forward. Why? Ki ad yamav. Because until this point in time, hayu bedor neshamos gedolos, v'hayu masignim ba'atzmam gadol hasaga b'tayru. Every person reached tremendous levels, elevating their neshama to their souls to the highest of heights. V'lo haya behechrach kol kach limso dafke limo Torah etzel rav. And since people were so knowledgeable, they didn't need to necessarily go to a rav. Ki gam ba'atzmam hayim asigim hasagos gadolos. Because they themselves had reached the level of scholars. V'gam shul haya shechachos ha'tayra. Torah was not forgotten so readily in that generation before Rabban Gamliel. people did not have doubts of what to do and what is not allowed to be done in halacha. They would be able to be poshut any of their shilos, answer any of the questions that they may have, because of their tremendous Torah knowledge. But that was the generation up until, but not including the generation of Rabbi Gamliel. And this is the reason, explains the Sefer Beis Lavos, that we now call this person Rabban. This guy over there, he's a rabbi. Why do we need to say that he's a rabbi? Because before this, everyone was on that level of being a rabbi. Or many, many people, nonetheless. But when it came to the generation of Gamliel, he was singled out as one of the few individuals who had acquired the same level of the knowledge that so many other people in his previous generations had easily acquired. L'kach bo Rabban Gamliel. And this is the reason why Rabban Gamliel says his message, that he himself called Rabban, Machmas Chalishas Koach B'Torah HaKadosha, because the lack of Torah knowledge, Lizet Omar, and this is why he preached, Asil Chorav, provide for yourself a teacher. And by doing so, having a mentor, someone to turn to when you're in doubt, your doubts will be removed from your mind because they'll be able to answer all of your questions. Although this point was already made before in the names of Yoshua ben Prachia of acquiring for yourself a teacher. And therefore, according to this explanation, the reason why he was called Rabban Gamliel is really a reflection of not just him, but the entire generation. That they would look at him and say, oh, there's the rabbi. Because they themselves did not elevate their own levels to be able to reach their madrega to the highest of heights, like that of the previous generations. This is the reason why, as I always mention, Perkei Avos is more than just a book on ethics. Because if you want a book on ethics, just go to your local Barnes & Noble and buy a book. And it's written by one author. And they'll tell you everything a person should do. How to hold your fork, how to hold your spoon, how to sit nicely. Every single mannerism that is appropriate and proper. But if you wish to act like the paparazzi, follow that person around. And you may, not for sure, but you may be disappointed that the person who wrote that book may not necessarily live up to his own words. However, when we study Perkei Avos, we also need to focus on the person and the generation. And the person and the generation, it's not just that he said these words, he lived by them. Therefore, appropriately, Rabban Gamliel, in his generation, where he saw a generation of suffix of doubt, he said, Asil Chorav, please, find a teacher, although they're in short supply, his stalagmin is suffix, and although there's tremendous doubts in this generation, due to the lack of Torah knowledge, that rabbi will be able to assist you and give you the knowledge that you so desperately need to hear. It's brought down in the Tosfos Yom Tov, the reason why, furthermore, we find a different language of this Mishnah to the Mishnayos mentioned previously. Says the Tosfos Yom Tov, Rabban Gamliel Omer, Behu ben beno shel Hillel, Rabban Gamliel Hazokin, who was the grandson of Hillel, Lekacho nichtav loshen Kabbalah. We find in the previous Mishnayos, we find in the first Mishnah, Moshe Kibel Torah, Mesinai, Mesorah Yoshua. We find the languages of Kabbalah, Mesorah, that the Torah is given over, which implies that a tremendous amount of Torah knowledge, if not all of it, was given over and transmitted from one generation to the next. However, in this instance, when Rabbi Gamliel speaks, we do not find the language not of Kabbalah and not of Mesorah. And the reason, says the Tosfos Yom Tov, Lefi Shematalmidei Shammai VeHillel, from the generation after Shammai and Hillel, their students, Nisravta HaMachlokas BeYisrael, there became a tremendous amount of controversy and discussion and argument among the Jewish people. Shetoris kol chacham v'chacham. Every person had their own interpretation of whether it's tameh, it's tahar, it's mutter, it's aser. Lo ha'isem gvolos mekubelos v'nimster kamo etzah harishonim. and it was not given over in the same level as it was in the previous generations, Kach Pirusha HaMefarshim. That the reason why Rabbi Gamliel, there's no word Masorah, no word Kabbalah, is not a reflection necessarily on Rabbi Gamliel, but on his generation. A generation where there was tremendous machlokas, that they were unable to reach conclusive answers, were not able to always reach the bottom line. It was a generation filled with suffix of doubt. Because of this level, this lack of knowledge, we can no longer say the language of Kabbalah or Masorah. We see from this Tosfos Yom Tov a very important message. The message that when it comes to machlokas, a person who's constantly involved in bickering and fighting, instead of focusing on the task at hand, you'll turn around and realize the time that you wasted and that you could have utilized that time more effectively and become a much greater individual. The task that you were complaining about, instead of spending so much time fighting and pointing fingers, to be able to jump and do the task, you would be able to have accomplished a whole lot more. And this is self-evident when it came to the generation of Gamliel. Because there was so much machlokas, the level of Torah decreased tremendously. But this is also a message that I tell the youth of our generation. Many kids in the year 2007 look at the previous generations and they say that we live in the most advanced communication, highest levels of technology, where the internet didn't exist, where there's so many tremendous scientific advancements and cures and medications that never occurred before. We must be the greatest and most brilliant people, and all those that came before us, our predecessors, our ancestors, do not have that same amount of knowledge. To them I say that's 100% incorrect. According to Jewish philosophy, we believe that the previous generations were superior in Torah knowledge and knowledge in general, much more than the generations that we live in today. In fact, we know this is the case, how the immediate gratification that we need is not a reflection on our ability to sit down and study. But rather, we live in a generation where our levels and ability to focus on one topic is so minimal and so minimized. And because of technology, that graphics constantly change on our TV sets every few seconds, is because we constantly need that stimuli. Otherwise, we will not be able to focus our attention and to be able to learn and to grow. This is a tremendous challenge as a teacher, to be able to live in a generation where you have the internet, where you have TV and iPods, everything going against the grain of sitting down and studying and reading and learning. And the reason why we're so successful in this generation, I believe, is because we ride on the coattails of the previous generations. It would be foolish just to begin and to start anew and to reinvent the wheel. But the reason why we have the advances is not necessarily because we ourselves are so brilliant. It's because we live in the newest generation. We're able to carry with us everything that was from before. Moving on to the words of the Bartanura. The Bartanura tells us when it comes to the Asel Harav, to appoint for yourself a teacher, L'inyan Hora Medaber Achshav. It's coming to tell us that we need someone to teach us the proper ways of how we're supposed to act and the proper ways we're supposed to interpret for halacha, for Jewish law. Im ba din lefanecha. If something comes in front of us, v'nistapek bo, and we have a suffix, we're not sure what to do, asil charav. This is the time to appoint and to find a teacher. There's a story by the Nodabi Yehuda that turned to the great Rav, Rav Shmulka of Nicholsburg, and he asked, the Nodabi Yehuda wondered, why do you spend so much time traveling back and forth to visit your rabbi? You're extremely knowledgeable on your own. And yet you spend a lot of your time, you have to travel, he doesn't live right next to you. And you have to spend all this time and money where you could be sitting and studying and utilizing your time more effectively. Why is it so important that you yourself have a Rav? Why do you need to have a teacher? And he answered the Nod of Yehuda in a beautiful manner. He turned to the beginning of Parshas Yisro, in which Yisro, the father-in-law of Moshe Rabbeinu, the teacher, the pasuk begins, Vayishma Yisro Kohen Midyan Chosin Moshe is Kol Asher Oso Kim Lemoshe Yisrael Amo. That Yisro, the minister of Midyan, the father-in-law of Moshe, heard everything that God did to Moshe and to Israel, his people. And Rashi, the first Rashi in Parshas Yisro, asks, Ma Shemu Hashemu Ava? What was it exactly that Yisro heard that inspired him to need to go to a teacher, to need to go to Moshe Rabbeinu? And Rashi says that Yisro heard of two incidents that occurred in his generation. Kriyas Yamsov and Milchamas Amalek. When it came to the Kriyas Yamsov, where the Mitzrayim and the Egyptians drowned, and Milchama, the Milchamas Amalek, where this nation of cowards who snuck up behind us when we were weak and weary, attacked us from behind, stabbing us in the back, killing those who were behind, the weak ones. That was a nation that attacked us, and we also were able to be protected from them. What is the reason that these are the two things that inspired Yisro to come to Moshe Rabbeinu? So Rav Shmulka of Nicholsburg explains that if you are living in a generation of miracles and wonders, maybe we would be different. Now that we live in a generation of Hester Panim, we don't see God's miracles on a daily basis. Maybe that's the reason why I don't dedicate myself wholeheartedly to every single aspect of Torah, authentic Judaism. But if I lived in a generation where Hashem would reveal Himself, then maybe I would be a much greater person. Now this Yisro said, no. Because look at two incidents. Look at the story of Kriyas Yamsov. The Egyptians, who they themselves witnessed the splendor, the glory of Hashem, the Eser Makos, and this nation running out of their country, and they could do nothing to protect them, and yet they drowned. They walked into the sea that split, a tremendous miracle. They still did not believe. They still looked at that and said, well, maybe it was God, maybe it wasn't God, maybe it was a natural phenomenon. Who knows? They placed a suffix in their mind that maybe God still doesn't exist despite all the apparent, blatant, clear miracles that were in front of them. We also see this by Milchamas Amalek. When it came to the war of Amalek, Amalek also knew what happened. They knew that this was a nation, that God was on their side, that they saw and heard about what happened in Egypt. They didn't care. They didn't care about the miracles. To Amalek, they felt, okay, it's possible that maybe the reason why this happened was because the Egyptians did something bad, they deserve punishment. But what did we do wrong to them? We can kill them. They also had this suffix. And therefore Yisro thought, even if you live in a generation of tremendous miracles, you can still have suffix in your mind. As great of a generation that you live in, and the abilities that God gives you and those skills, you can still possibly falter. And therefore, Yisro went to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe, the rabbi, Moshe, the teacher, Asi L'Chorav, explains Rav Shmulka of Nicholsburg, even though Hashem gave me tremendous wisdom, and I'm a great individual, but I also could have the same sveikos. I also could have doubt. And therefore, I do exactly as Rabbi Gamliel and Yisro instructed me to do. Asi L'Chorav. I will constantly visit my teacher to remove all doubts from within my mind. It's further explained by the Be'er Ha'avos that there is a connection, correlation between Asi L'Chorav and Mistalek Min HaSafek. There is a connection between accept a teacher upon yourself and remove yourself from uncertainty. However, it's not the uncertainty about yourself. It's the uncertainty about your teacher. Asi L'Chorav, make sure that the teacher that you have is someone that there is no suffix, that there is no uncertainty about that individual. And this reminds me of the story of a great person who reached one of the highest levels of Pardes, Pshat, Drush, Remez, Sod, learned the highest of levels of Torah. But unfortunately, this man who saw and witnessed something so disturbing went off the derech and completely threw everything that he had away. His name was Elisha ben Avuya. But throughout Talmudic literature, where we do not even want to mention his name, instead he's known simply as Acher, the other one, that person over there. But Acher, as great of a Torah knowledge that he had, Rav Meir, his student, remained his student. Rav Meir wished to constantly learn, even after he was no longer following Torah Judaism, that he still wanted to be able to learn from his great wisdom, the wisdom of Acher. In fact, the Talmud tells us that it was a Shabbos, it was a Yom Tov, and that Rav Meir was walking, and his Rebbe, his teacher, was on a donkey, and he was looking up at him, quite literally and also figuratively, and they were learning. And when it comes to the laws of Shabbos and Yom Tov, there's what's called Tchum Shabbos. You cannot walk beyond a certain amount of space. After 2,000 cubits, you're no longer allowed to continue in your journey, but rather you must stay in that place. And Rav Meir, while they were talking, stopped. And Acher said, "What are you doing? Why are you stopping? Let's keep walking." Rav Meir said, "I can't. This Tchum Shabbos. I have to stop." And Acher said, "Okay, I'll see you later. I'm going." Rav Meir looked at him and said, "Wait! Why don't you stop? Why don't you come back to us?" And he said, "I'm sorry, Rav Meir. Sorry, my wonderful student. I'm a lost cause. I can never be changed. I can never improve." And so all the rabbis went to Rav Meir and said, "I don't understand, Rav Meir. This person has gone off the derech. How could you learn from his Torah?" He said, "I'll tell you. It's like a fruit. You take a peach and you bite into it and it's delicious. You enjoy the fruit, the actual meat of the fruit. But once you get to the pit, you're not going to keep biting into the pit. You'll break your teeth. Everyone knows that when it comes to the pit, you throw out the pit. You eat the fruit." So that's exactly what I am when it comes to Elisha ben Avuya, my teacher. When it comes to the beautiful pearls of Torah, which I know is correct and real, that's like the fruit. But when he starts spewing hatred and things which are anti-Torah, that's like the pit and I'm easily able to discard it. But, explains the Be'er Avos, only a Rav Meir is able to distinguish, when it comes to Torah, the difference between a fruit and the pit. However, when it comes to us, Asil Charav, make sure that the Rav, the teacher that you have, Tistalik min Suffolk, is beyond the shadow of the doubt, an individual of respect, someone that is correct, someone that is not coming to teach you something against Torah values. And maybe, as we mentioned on the page from Wikipedia.com, that this is another reason why Rabbi Gamliel talked about Asil Charav v'Tistalik min Suffolk. Because he lived in a generation of an individual that caused a suffolk. Although to many he was a Rav, he was a teacher, he was a leader, nonetheless his influences were of course against Torah Judaism. And therefore, Asil Charav v'Tistalik min Suffolk. Be very careful the teacher that you have, so that this is not a person who will steer you in the opposite way of the way the Torah is supposed to be, authentic and correct. If we continue on the next page, on page 3, we find the words of the Bartanura. The Bartanura tells us, on the words of the Stalkman of Suffolk, "V'lotivsuk alav atol vadecha," that you shouldn't just come up when you have a doubt and figure it out all on your own. Ki had the Rava, similar to the story of Rava, ki havi asa tarafto legabe, whenever he was presented with something which potentially was not kosher, havi machnif lekulu tavchi demas mechasya, he would gather up all of the butchers who were knowledgeable in these types of laws in the city of Machasia. Omer, and he said, Ki heich domatin sheva machshur, in order that I will be able to discuss with them and to be able to also get their opinion. So we see that even the great Rava, person who could have easily, when it came to a suffix, people are going to listen to him. But in the case of even the great leaders, when they are in doubt, they will turn to other people for other opinions. But we're not even on the level of Rava. But how could we do anything but to ask a Rav? Unfortunately, we live in a generation where the rabbi's most important question is, do we say Avarachamim this Shabbos? But the reality is, we should be asking a rabbi just like we would be asking a doctor. Now, not knowing much about medicine, but let's say, imagine for a moment that a person is not feeling well. And you say, you know what? It's my lucky day. Because I just purchased this little box. I think they call it a monitor, which is connected to a computer. And all I have to do is keep clicking this achbar, they call a mouse, to a website, and I'll be able to find out exactly what's wrong with me. And there it goes. It tells me to go to the pharmacy to pick up this over-the-counter medication, and that's going to be the perfect cure. That's all I need. You look at that person, you say, you're foolish. You are not so sure whether or not this is necessarily your illness. You may very well be right, but there's a very good chance there may be something else wrong with you because you don't have the knowledge and expertise of a doctor. Why don't you go to a doctor and find out if 100% it's correct? Maybe you'll be right and you'll pat yourself on the back, but they may very well know something which you don't. And they'll be able to tell you something which may very well be the difference between life and death. How come we don't think about that when it comes to being in Torah, when it comes to a Shaila, when it comes to a suffix that we have? We cannot always follow the motto of Home Depot. You can do it, right? Okay, you can do it yourself. But the problem is, why don't we model the behavior of Rava? Someone who, even though he was tremendously knowledgeable, he would always ask other opinions, second opinions, if not even more. We continue with the Bartanura. He focuses on the last part of this Mishnah. The Altarbul Aser Amudos, that when it comes to tithes, when a person separates their Truma, their Miser, you should make sure not to give excessively by estimating. Rather, as the expression goes, measure twice and cut once. Now, when it comes to Truma, we know that it's given to the Kohen. A specific amount? Not necessarily. The Torah doesn't say, but we generally give about 2% or 1/50. Whether or not you're generous or a little stingy, you may decide to give 1/40 or 1/60. When it comes to Meister, it depends on the year. We know we have a 7-year cycle. On Shemitah, you don't have to give anything, because on the sabbatical or Shemitah year, you let your land lie fallow. We're not supposed to use our crops, plant, or harvest. They remain hefker ownerless for the aniyim, for the poor people. Now, what happens on years 1 through 6? Well, when it comes to Meister Rishon, the 10% or Eser that is given to the Levi, that's done every single year, years 1 through 6. When it comes to years 1, 2, 4, and 5, we have the mitzvah Meiser Sheni, that we give 10% not to any person except for ourselves. But what we need to do is we take those produce and we bring them to Israel, and that's where it's eaten. Some explain the reason for Meiser Sheni is a way to boost the economy in Medinas Israel. And on years 3 and 6, instead of Meiser Sheni, is Meiser Ani giving 10% to the impoverished, to the poor. Says the Bartanura, the Altar Velaser Mudos, Shamafresh Masros Mu'umad. The person separates by estimating, how could you go wrong? After all, let's go Machmir. This is the trend in 2007. People love to go strict. One day, this person takes upon themselves this chumrah, I won't eat this food. Then I think, oh my goodness, I better have a bigger chumrah than them. So it's the chumrah of the week club. Now, sometimes, when you go machmir, you're really not going strict at all. You're breaking halacha, even though in your mind you think you're going above and beyond the letter of the law. And this is what the Bartanura says, that no matter what, if you estimate the amount of tithes, enu nitzel min hakalkul, you're not going to be saved from making a mistake. And he looks at him a marashach either way. Im pochis v'masheroi litein. Let's say a person gives less than they're supposed to give. So let's say, instead of the 10%, they give 8%. So masrosim sukanim upeirosim kukolim. The meiser they gave so far is okay, because they gave 8%. They still have a couple more percent to give. But so far, the 8% that the Levi received was fine. But the problem is the other fruit, the 92% that you still have in your field, you are not allowed to eat it. Because in that 90% is also 2% of meiser that you did not give, even though you thought maybe you did, because you measured, you didn't measure, you guessed. And therefore, you're going to end up eating things which you're not supposed to be. V'im hadif, so let's say I give more. I end up going a little over. I give 15% to the Levi. Okay, so in that case, peirosim and sukanim, your fruits are okay because you gave meiser. You have gave a lot more than meiser, so your crops are fine. You can eat it and enjoy. However, masrosim and kukolim, this poor Levi, instead of giving him the 10%, now he gave him 15%. 10% of it was meiser rishon. The other 5% is nothing. It's just regular food. And because it's all mixed, we of course cannot decipher and distinguish which is meiser and which is not. This Levi is going to end up violating eating something which he is not really supposed to be, because he thought it was Maiser Rishon. So you acting like you're a big machmir by doing more above and beyond, you really end up breaking laws and causing other people to stumble. Lifnei Iver lo seitein michshol, in front of the blind, you should not set up a stumbling block. But I believe this is also a very important message when it comes to a magnet of our religion. That sometimes people who have issues and problems gravitate toward orthodoxy. And we find this certainly in the papers recently on Erev Pesach, that when it comes to Bir Chametz, every pyromaniac from the world comes out, and they're making huge bonfires, and there's not a single year that Hatzalah does not have numerous burns, because people go way over the top when it comes to Bir Chametz. Explains Rav Avram Tversky, there's also another issue when it comes to being too strict or being machmir. That is the issue of OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. That you have someone, instead of washing their hands a couple of times, they wash themselves a tenth time, 100 times, 1,000 times, until the skin is peeling very much off their hands. This is OCD. But they can cover and hide themselves under halacha, saying, I'm just being machmir. On this, Rabbi Gamliel says, no, the altar bil aser mudos. We cannot go above and beyond. We have to follow halacha and not to be too machmir, because being too machmir ends up being destructive, not only against, in the example of the Bartanua of the Levi, who ends up taking something which he really shouldn't have, but it could also be self-destructive, it could be something which affects you emotionally, psychologically, and mentally. This actually happened to me, my previous position in a different community, that there was an individual who displayed tendencies of OCD, and he was on medication. And his wife came up to me and said, Rabbi, you have to do something. I said, what's wrong? She said, you know when my husband davens at home, he says a bracha as much as 100 times. And the reason why is because he keeps thinking, did I say the word? Did I say baruch? Did I say it clearly? Maybe I didn't. So I'll say the bracha again and again and again and again. So do something. I told her, I said, listen, I'm not a professional, but you're giving me the opportunity to do so, I'll certainly listen to you, I'll try my very best. So I sat down with him, and I started learning with him Hilchos Brachos. And I told him, I said, listen, it is true that we say a bracha, it must be said clearly, has to be said with kavan. But there's another concept in Hilchos Brachos, that Safek Brachos Lahakel, that in the event that you said a bracha, you cannot just keep saying brachos over and over and over again until you finally get it right. And therefore, this was a way that he was able to calm down and relax from saying his bracha so many times because of his obsessive-compulsive disorder. And this is how Avram Tversky explains the altar belaser amudos, that we do not want a person to be so machmir that it ends up affecting them to this level of being an OCD. And I'd like to share another reason why it's not in one's best interest to constantly go so machmir, to go so strict. has brought down a story of Simcha Zissel, who was the Rosh Hashiva, the dean in Kelm. In Kelm, he had a tremendous, tremendous yeshiva with many, many students. And because they were so busy and involved in learning, there was a little store right next door, and there was a cash box. And it was based on a trust system that if a person would go and get some food, they wouldn't have to spend all this time going to the clerk, to the manager, giving him money, but they would just do it themselves. This way they wouldn't have to stand in line and spend all that time. So the manager, the owner of the store, came up to Rav Simcha Zissel and said, "I have great news." He said, "What's so great? What happened?" So I was counting the money in my cash box, and I did an inventory in my store, and I realized that your students are giving me more money than the food actually costs. They're actually overpaying. Isn't that unbelievable how great your students are, that they're giving above and beyond what they're supposed to give? Rav Simcha Zissel was furious. And he said, "No longer are we allowing this trust system. No longer are we allowing this cash box that you can just pick the food and give the money yourself." So the student said, "Why? What's the problem?" So I'll tell you. Because when you go in there and you have extra money, maybe instead of taking the 11 cents for change, you just give the dollar. Instead of giving the exact 89 cents. You don't have all the exact change. So you give a dollar. So you end up giving 11 cents. You give above and beyond that day. Excellent. Terrific. But now that you feel that you can give more today, what happens tomorrow that you forgot money in your dorm? You didn't bring a penny. You'll think, you know what? I didn't bring any money today, but you know, I've given 11 extra cents this day, that day, that day. So today I'm able to give, to take without having to give anything. He said, the concern that once I see my students are giving more than they actually need to give, potentially next time they'll end up taking something which they feel they're entitled to and end up taking something which they really are not allowed to take. And this is the reason in the Torah we have the words, "Do not increase above and beyond the 613, and do not do less than the 613 mitzvahs." Why are they written next to each other? It's because once a person does 613 mitzvahs, so what? So they do another mitzvah. Who cares? They made it up. So at least they did the Tariq mitzvahs. It's because once they feel that there is no longer specific borders and specific boundaries of mitzvahs, that they can start doing more than what they're being told to do. Tomorrow, just like the story of the students in Kelm, they very well may end up doing less. And as I mentioned before in the previous Mishnah, this is similar to the story of the father and son that were in England. That the child looked up at this huge clock by the name of Big Ben, and he said, "Dad, I don't understand. I'm killing my neck. It hurts so badly to look so high. Doesn't make any sense. Why don't they take this clock and put it on eye level? So this way people can see what time it is without having to stretch and hurt their neck." The father said, "Son, I want to explain to you that if it was on eye level, people would look at their watches, and what would they say? My watch is correct. Big Ben or medium-sized Ben is 4 minutes off." And they would go to medium-sized Ben, and they would fix the clock according to their watch. Now that the Big Ben is way up in the sky, and it's out of reach, it's not possible that you can change it. You look at your watch, you say, "I have no choice, but I better adjust my cheshbon to it." And therefore, this is the idea, that a person does not have the right to do more or to do less, but rather we must adhere to exactly what is stated on Big Ben in the Torah, and not to do more, not to do less, not to estimate, but rather we must measure. Be'al tarbel aser amudos. But to do so, we have to again realize the importance of a teacher. A person must constantly remember that they need guidance. They need leadership to be able to make sure that no suffix will ever occur. That any doubt that they have will be addressed by this teacher. And although you would think, I'm scared to have a teacher because he may tell me it's not so good, he may go strict, but sometimes he'll tell you something which will be even more lenient than you would have thought. Maybe they'll give you a kula that you weren't even aware of. So maybe it'll be in your own best interest to have a rabbi. There's a story about a villager that used to constantly travel to another city to visit this great rabbi. And there he had a relationship. They would sit down and they would talk and have something to eat. And he would always ask different questions. He had a livestock. Sometimes he'd always have questions about his animals. Is the animal kosher? Is it treif? And sometimes the rabbi would say, I'm sorry, it's treif. And sometimes, in fact, he would say, no, you know what? The animal's kosher, you can still use, you can sell. Days turned to weeks, weeks to months, months to years. The guy never showed up. The rabbi, by chance, bumped into this villager in the marketplace, and the rabbi said, I understand. You used to come all the time. You were a regular. We were good friends. We used to talk. You used to ask me shilas. Why don't you ask me any shilas anymore? What happened? What happened to Asil Chorav? He said, I'll tell you. I'm glad that I bumped into you because I really need to start coming to you again. So why? What do you mean? What's wrong? So I'll tell you. I used to come to you all the time, and it was great, because sometimes you would tell me it was trade, sometimes you would tell me it's not kosher. But some person came up to me and said, you know, there's a new way to determine whether or not something is kosher or treif. I said, how? I said that the Torah tells us that if the food is in the veil, if it's treif, lokelav tashlichen oso, throw it to the dog. So a guy told me, he said, instead of traveling and schlepping all the way to the city to meet you, the rabbi, which I always enjoyed, all you have to do is anytime you have a suffolk, put the meat in front of your dog. If the dog eats it, it's clear that it's treif. In the event that it's not treif, if it's kosher, you'll know that's the case because your dog doesn't eat it. So the rabbi, who was quite amused, looked at him and said, okay, so why are you so upset? Why are you so disappointed? Why all of a sudden do you want to start coming back to me? He said, I'll tell you why. Because when I came to you, sometimes you were machmir and told me that the food was treif. Sometimes you were mekel and you said the food was kosher. But when it comes to my dog is always machmir. He always says it's treif because he's always eating my food. And the message, the moral of this story, is that when it comes to Asil Chorav, don't use your dog to be a rabbi. Go to someone who is knowledgeable, because you'll realize that sometimes, in fact, you'll realize that the food may be kosher. It may not always, like the dog, be treif. We look at Rashi. Rashi, similarly to the previous Mefarshim, tell us that Rabban Gamliel, Zehu Rabban Gamliel has Zokain, Benoshel Rabban Shimon, that Rabban Gamliel was the son of Rabban Shimon, Benoshel Hillel, he was the grandson of Hillel. We look at the Likutei Sheish. Likutei Sheish continues to focus on this idea of suffolk. What is the whole problem of being so cautious about a doubt? Maybe we should be even more careful about actual averus. We have enough problem keeping the Taryag Mitzvos. Why is Rabbi Gamliel focused on this idea of distalik min hasafek? And he brings down the words of the Shla HaKadosh. The Shla HaKadosh says in the name of the Rabbeinu Yonah, from Masechtas Brachos, She'onesh ha-safek gadol me'onesh ha-vadai. Greater is the punishment of someone who commits a sin through a safek. They were unsure if they even did anything wrong. That's even worse than someone who does it for sure that's wrong. Onesh be'vadai. Why? That doesn't make any sense. Sure it does. Explains the Rabbeinu Yonah. Batam hu. Ne'nei sha-vadai masim adam alibo. Because when it comes to a vadai, you know that you're making a mistake. And you're weak, you're impulsive, and you sinned. That's something which you realized. V'doeg, hopefully at some point in your life you'll feel bad about the mistake that you made. M'scharet al mashiasa, yal charata, you have regret that you committed that avera. V'chayzeh b'tshuva, b'vakish rachmim. Such a person realizes, I definitely did a mistake, I definitely shouldn't have done it, and I'm going to do tshuva. Aval al ha-safek, asasvars. When it comes to a person who does an avera, but maybe it wasn't an avera, it might have been okay, maybe I didn't really do anything, person starts having svars, which is in English called rationalization. You rationalize. It says when it comes to you embarrass your person in public, whitening his face, humiliating him, such a person is ein ochel kol haba. He has no portion in the world to come. But when it comes to ritzicha, when you literally stab the guy until you've taken his life from him, doesn't say ein ochel kol haba. And the reason is obvious. When it comes to ritzicha, there's no country that allows murder. It's obvious you can't murder someone. So if you murder someone, of course you'll realize you'll need to do tshuva, or else ein ochel kol haba. But when it comes to embarrassing, humiliating someone, he had it coming to him. He deserved it. I don't like him. No one likes him. You can rationalize. Explains the Shlach Kadosh. This is the danger of a suffolk. That when it comes to a suffolk, you may never do tshuva. You'll just continue to rationalize your behavior and keep doing the wrong forever and ever without ever improving, without ever changing. The Rambam tells us, even though, as we mentioned in Likutei Sheish previously, that this message of Asil Charav, of having a teacher, was already mentioned in a different Mishnah, it's not the same. Over there, when it was mentioned, it was talking about theoretical study of Al Hara. Our Mishnah is talking about practical halacha. What am I allowed to do? What am I not allowed to do? That is Asil Charav. Simuch HaRav explains the Rambam, have a rabbi, Shetismuch HaLav Isav HaHeter. You can rely on him when it comes to these questions, to Stalak HaTom and Asafik, and doubts will be removed. Kedi'am in Yerushalmi, as it says in the Talmud, Yerushalmi, Zil Aisili Zakein Menashuk, go and get an elder, a scholarly person from the marketplace, De'esmuch HaLav Eshulach, that you'll be able to rely on him, it'll be praiseworthy that you have done so. The Rabbeinu Yonah continues and says as follows: on Asil Charav is Stav Min Asafik. Ratzloma, that is to say, Chiyakabel Chaver L'Rav. You need a teacher. What do you mean? I'm the most brilliant man in the world. Is that how you really feel? It doesn't make a difference. Afal Pishul Nechman Yosim Menu. Even if that person is not wiser than you, but someone that you can bounce ideas off of, someone that may have a different perspective, looking at things in a different way. Yafil Imlo Hisig El Chachmaso. That person may give you that different perspective to be able to show you that, in fact, maybe you are wrong. Or did you think about this? Their experiences you cannot put a price on. And therefore, maybe based on their knowledge, even though you may have more book smarts, they may have more street smarts. They may have a different perspective to look at things and be able to give you a way of looking at it and to remove any suffix, any doubt from your mind. Because even the wisest of men have doubts. But when it comes to halacha, what they should do. They don't always know what to say. They don't always know what's the correct thing to do. And if they're lenient, what may happen? Maybe it was wrong. Maybe you told someone to do something which they really shouldn't have done. You're the one that caused that person to sin. Because you told them there was nothing wrong. Vim yesim is suffix, so I'm going to go strict. I'm not going to tell the guy that he's allowed to do it. I'm going to go strict and say it's forbidden. Throw that meat away. It's garbage. Take that huge roast and throw it in the garbage. Ulai mafsid b'monim shel Yisrael. Maybe it's kosher. Maybe there's nothing wrong with it. So big deal. So he threw away $100 worth of meat. You're not allowed to throw away food. But Torah chasolav. Hashem has compassion and mercy on the possessions that we own. God gave us the money and the wealth and the food that we have. Not to be thrown away. That's called batashchis. You're not allowed to tell someone to throw it away if it's really kosher. You can't go machmir. Because that's not going machmir. You're causing that person to throw away food, which he's not allowed to do. Alkein yasa chaver rav explains the Rabbeinu Yonah. You need a teacher. V'yishol meminas svei kosav. And ask him these questions of doubt. And it's also mentioned, says Rabbeinu Yonah, in the Gaonic period. Zichronu mevrachan, their memory should be a blessing. Amru, kol hecha delamar misafkale. Anytime one person was not sure of the law, and they said the law, but they were unsure. Well, Mar Pshitale, but for the other person, it was obvious, they knew the answer. Hilchasa Kamad Pshitale. We always say the halacha is like the one who the answer is simple, that they understood this is 100% the answer. Do you feel Talmud Eitzel Rav? Even in the scenario that the student, the one who is less knowledgeable, but he did more research, and he found out the 100% conclusive evidence that this is the right answer, the Rav, who in general is more knowledgeable, but he's a person that is still in a suffix, we will hold like the Talmud. As we mentioned throughout the Gemara, Koach dehatera adif, that when it comes to a person who can come up with an answer, and that answer may be a leniency, that's better than the person who simply goes strict because of the case of doubt. I'd like to conclude with the words of Rashi, and then touch upon this week's Parsha Acharemos. Rashi tells us the reason why we cannot just guess. Shahari Torah nas nashir b'meiser. The Torah gave us a specific amount that a person is supposed to give when it comes to tithes. Meiser, or eser, of course, shu echad miasara, 1/10, 10%, tithing. Lafiko sar cheshvan. You need to calculate so the exact amount is given, no more, no less. But truma, when it comes to giving to the Kohen, looks of shi'ur. The Torah doesn't say a specific amount. El rachis to gancha, give the first of your grain. Figachi no telos mo'amid, that you can measure. But when the Torah tells you to be exact, you must be exact. And I believe this is the message of this week's Parsha, Parsha's Acharemos. Acharemos discusses the death of Aaron's children, Nadav and Avihu. And the question is, why did they die? So there are different interpretations. Some people say it's because they entered into the Kodesh while intoxicated. Because immediately afterwards the Pasuk says, Yain v'shecher al teisht, that they should not drink and then do the service. Some explain that they, instead of listening to Moshe Rabbeinu, a teacher, they were mara halacha b'fnei rabo. They paskined in front of this teacher. They made a decision without letting the teacher be the one that gave the answer. A different explanation is based on the words of Acharemos. Aaron was told, "Val yavol b'chol eis al kodesh." A person cannot enter whenever they want into the kodesh, into the holies. And some explain this is what Nadav and Avihu did. Nadav and Avihu were great tzaddikim, and they looked at their avoda, the minimal amount of times that they were supposed to enter into the Kodesh or the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and they said, that is a great amount of time, but we are going to do even more than the Torah tells us. We will enter the Kodesh HaKadoshim because we're on such a great high holy level. Says the Torah, V'al yavo b'choleis el Kodesh. You cannot always elevate yourself to a level of Kodesh, of holiness. Rather, you must adhere to and follow the boundaries of the Torah. You cannot do more and you cannot do less. As the Pasuk says, Lo Sasser Yamanu Small. We should not go too far to the right, too far to the left. And figuratively speaking, not going too far to the right, being far to the right, referring to being ultra-orthodox to the point that you're being machmir, blind strictness, and not doing necessarily what you're supposed to do because you're going so machmir. And also to the small, to the left. Do not end up, of course, breaking and not following and bending Torah, authentic Judaism. Losasiyomenu small. Person should not be too far to the right or too far to the left. Rather, when it comes to the mitzvos, a person needs to measure, do every single mitzvah exactly as it's prescribed. As Rashi says, Sar Cheshvan, we need to make an exact calculation. We must be meduyak. We must not guesstimate. Shabbos.